Welcome to This is Robotics, radio news, podcasting news and commentary from around the world. Please join us for today's radio news report with your host, Tom Green, for news, analysis, and commentary from the wide world of robotics. Radio News is a production of Asian Robotics Review, your most trusted news resource in global robotics. And now, here's Tom.
Hi, folks, and welcome to this special edition of This is Robotics. I'm Tom Green, your host, guide, and fellow companion to today's look at the bombshell that's just exploded in the midst of digital technology. This special podcast from This is Robotics is all about AI, artificial intelligence, and ML, machine learning. Why it's the digital talk of the town, why it's going to be more than human-friendly, why it will spawn millions of new jobs, careers, and businesses, why it will free robots from the bondage of computer code, and why that's a good thing, and why and how cobots will become homogenized and commoditized in this new world order, and why the makers of grippers, you know, end-of-arm tools, are going to experience a bonanza in sales. Here's the bombshell.
So I'm here to tell you that the field of computer science is doomed.
That was Matt Welsh, former principal engineer at both Google and Apple, and also a former Harvard professor of computer science. He's speaking to a gathering of Harvard computer science students. After he drops his bombshell, Welsh does a one-minute deep dive on his opening doom statement. He basically states the case for the end game for computer code. Here it is.
So I'm here to tell you that the field of computer science is doomed, okay? And I actually kind of mean this, although I'm going to put it in somewhat humorous terms, that if you think about computer science, what is the field about? What does it mean? Where did it come from? What is it? What's the core idea of it? It's the idea of taking an idea, an algorithm or a concept or a data structure, and translating it into a program that can generally be run by like a von Neumann architecture machine, right? Okay, so that's computer science in a nutshell. The problem is that the goal of CS has always had this kind of core fundamental assumption or axiom that is that the programs that we're all talking about here have been implemented, maintained, and have to be understood by humans. Right? That if I print out the code for a program, a human, some human, maybe not everyone, but at least maybe the person who wrote it, if not someone else, can understand it. Now, here's the problem, right? Humans suck at all three of these things. We're terrible at writing programs, we're terrible at maintaining them, and we're absolutely terrible at understanding them. So what does that really mean for the field? So I want to make this claim that 50 years of research into programming languages has done effectively nothing to solve this problem. We've been at this for a long time now. 50 years is a long time. And we keep inventing new languages and new programming concepts and new abstractions and new data types and new proof methodologies. But none of the stuff that we've developed in terms of tooling or languages or proof techniques or documentation or linters has actually solved this problem. And I don't think another 50 years is going to solve it. I think this idea of building automated tools to help humans write better software has played itself out.
It seems that the digital disruption that has been running rampant for two decades through most everything in the world has now collided with computer code. And computer code will never be the same. As Mark Andreessen famously announced in 2011, software is eating the world. To which, in 2017, at an MIT lecture, Jensen Huang, CEO and co-founder of NVIDIA, agreed, but added, "That's true, but AI will soon eat software." Well, as of March 2024, in what is arguably the greatest keynote address in tech history, Huang declared that AI's ascendancy to the throne of programming had now come to pass. Generative AI is eating software, and very quickly. As AI researcher and star of OpenAI, Andre Kapathi, added, the hottest new programming language is English. Artificial intelligence and machine learning and its newest flavor, generative AI, is the force behind it. The most authoritative and persistent voice of Gen AI is still the same guy, Jensen Huang. Here's Huang explaining it all.
I'm going to say something, and it's going to sound completely opposite of what people feel. You probably recall, over the course of the last 10 years, 15 years, almost everybody who sits on a stage like this would tell you it is vital that your children learn computer science. Everybody should learn how to program. And in fact, it's almost exactly the opposite. It is our job to create computing technology such that nobody has to program, and that the programming language is human. Everybody in the world is now a programmer. This is the miracle. This is the miracle of artificial intelligence. For the very first time, we have closed the gap. The technology divide has been completely closed. And this is the reason why so many people can engage artificial intelligence. It is the reason why every single government, every single industrial conference, every single company is talking about artificial intelligence today. Because for the very first time, you can imagine everybody in your company being a technologist. And so this is a tremendous time for all of you to realize that the technology divide has been closed.
So now it looks like everybody's going to be a technologist. Everybody's going to be a programmer. Everybody's going to be using generative AI or Gen AI in the form of, say, ChatGPT or some other tool. And they'll be asking questions, basically, in English of these large language models, which is essentially all of humanity's knowledge all in one place. And this question will go into that LLM, and hopefully the correct answer will come back, although no one knows how that happens. It's just that the right answer seems to be coming back more often than not. So how exactly does all of that happen? Well, let's go back to Mike Welsh, who will explain it all in a very simple, concise way.
Let's talk about Rust. Everybody's programming in Rust. It's the latest and greatest thing since sliced bread. I spent 2 years running engineering at a startup that was completely Rust-based. I ran a big team full of Rust developers. I actually learned Rust myself, kind of. This is the same program in Rust. I don't make heads or tails of this. It is incredibly hard to write programs that are easy to understand, easy to maintain, easy to reason about. Okay? So that's the kind of state of the art. This is where we've gotten in 50 years, from Fortran to this. And I just want to make the claim that this is not going to work. Okay? We're done. Game over. So what's next? Well, this is how I write code today. This is a prompt passed to the GPT-4 model. And it's part of a larger program that reads in some text of a transcript that's been derived from a podcast audio feed. We're feeding the transcript into the model, and we're giving it these instructions. We're saying, please summarize the following segment of this podcast transcript. Only use the information in the text. Do not, in caps — this is important, by the way, the all caps is super important — do not use any information you know about the world. Include the title of the podcast, the name of the episode, and the names of the speakers, if known. This English statement here encodes an algorithm. It describes something that I want to do with an input data and the output data that I want, and my expectations about the kind of thing that's in the output data. So a few things to notice about this. The first thing to notice about this is I don't think anyone could ever write down the algorithm for what this is supposed to do in any existing programming language or any programming language that we're likely to come up with in the future. How do you write this algorithm? You can't, right? There's no pseudocode. There's no proof. There's no mathematical symbology here, right? The other thing to notice is, at least for me, I don't know about any of you, do you understand this? Do you understand what it's saying? Does it make sense? Can you read it? Can you reason about what it's supposed to do? Yes, of course, right? It's in plain English. Doesn't have to be English, by the way. It could be in Mandarin Chinese or Esperanto. Okay, so the point being that this is now how I am actually writing code. And what's funny about this is a lot of it is trial and error and experimentation. By the way, that's the same when I'm writing normal computer code. And the other thing that's interesting about this is there's a lot of subtlety in terms of how you instruct the model and how you know what it's going to do with your instructions. You can't write a manual that says, well, here's this set of words that you need to use to get the model to do X, Y, or Z. You have to just try out certain things. In this case, I found out the do not in all caps really helped because I really wanted to emphasize that point to the model.
Long about now, it's probably dawning on you, maybe it has before this, that asking good questions of an LLM using GPT is a great idea. The better the question you can ask, which is called prompts, the better the prompt you can ask using GPT of the LLM, the better the answers that you will get. It's such an important area of artificial intelligence that there's an entire industry that has sprung up around it called AI prompt engineering. Now, just what exactly goes into this new industry and how best to pose questions to an LLM is the subject of a brief interlude between Lex Fridman, you know him and his podcast, and Stephen Wolfram. Stephen Wolfram is a British-American mathematician, computer scientist, theoretical physicist, and businessman. He's known for his work in computer science, mathematics, and theoretical physics. In 2012, he was named a fellow of the American Mathematical Society. So the next piece is Lex and Stephen Wolfram chatting about what would make a good questioner. What kind of person would be a good person to ask the best questions of ChatGPT for a large language model? Give a listen. I think you may be surprised. I was with what they came up with.
The question of who's going to be a great prompt engineer.
Yeah.
Okay. So my current theory this week, good expository writers are good prompt engineers.
What's an expository writer? So like
somebody who can explain stuff well.
Huh. But which department does that come from?
In the university?
Yeah.
I have no idea. I think they killed off all the expository writing departments.
Well, there you go. Strong words with Stephen Wolfram.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure if that's right. I mean, I actually am curious because, in fact, I just sort of initiated this kind of study of what's happened to different fields at universities. Because, like, you know, there used to be geography departments at all universities, and then they disappeared. Actually, right before GIS became common, I think they disappeared. You know, linguistics departments came and went in many universities. And it's kind of interesting because these things that people have thought were worth learning at one time, and then they kind of die off. And then, you know, I do think that it's kind of interesting that for me, writing prompts, for example, I realize, you know, I think I'm an okay expository writer. And I realize when I'm sloppy writing a prompt and I don't really think, because I'm thinking I'm just talking to an AI. I don't need to, you know, try and be clear in explaining things. That's when it gets totally confused.
And I mean, in some sense, you have been writing prompts for a long time with Wolfram Alpha, thinking about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
How to convert natural language into computation.
Well, right. But that's the one thing that I'm wondering about is, it is remarkable the extent to which you can address an LLM like you can address a human, so to speak. And I think that is because it learnt from all of us humans. It's the reason that it responds to the ways that we will explain things to humans is because it is a representation of how humans talk about things. But it is bizarre to me, some of the things that kind of are sort of expository mechanisms that I've learnt in trying to write clear, you know, expositions in English, that, just for humans, that those same mechanisms seem to also be useful for the LLM.
So I think you can readily see that in the future, the very near future, you're going to have robots tending machines, piece picking, filling and unloading pallets or trucks, all guided by prompt engineering and the words carved out in ChatGPT or the like, by good expository writers. There may be departments at every corporation for expository writers called AI Prompt Engineering Department. And there's going to be a tremendous need for them. Andrew Ng, the former president of Google Brain and Baidu, et cetera, the inventor of Coursera, and of course now he's an investor. He gives frequent talks at Sequoia, the investment company out on the West Coast. And one of his most recent talks was about just that, the amount of potential jobs around the world that are available to prompt engineers. Right now, he says that most of the LLM technology and Gen AI technology is squashed up into the tech world. He said, but there's a long tail of need that stretches out through industry. He cited one during his recent talk about helping a pizza company select the kinds of cheeses that go on their on the pizzas, which reminded me of a story that Jensen Huang tells of a Japanese farmer and his wife. These two grow cucumbers. He grows them and she sorts them. She sorts some for regular supermarkets, others for exclusive supermarkets, still others for pickles, still others for sushi. I guess sushi takes a definite kind of cucumber. Now, these two people, the farmer and his wife, represent small to medium enterprises. A small to medium enterprise is generally under 500 people, but most of them are 50 and under. So they fall in the 50 to under category. So here they are, a farmer and his wife who's the sorter, and they have a son who had an idea. And the idea was to take pictures and video of the mother sorting the cucumbers. And then what he would do was take all that material and train an AI to do the sorting. Then they got a cobot, and the cobot, fed with the information, did the sorting, which freed up a lot of time for the woman who happened to be sorting to spend with her customers, to know the customers better, to share cucumber recipes with the customers, whatever. And their business began to grow, which of course led me to extrapolate. My daughter Hannah loves to cook, loves to bake, loves confection. The confection business in the world is $1.6 trillion. Cake making worldwide is $68 billion. So if she hung out a shingle on the sidewalk that said, AI prompt engineer for confections and cakes, she may get a little business from every single cake maker, candy maker in town or in the area, and replicate exactly what the son did for sorting cucumbers with her customers. Potentially, where are the most labor-intensive parts of baking and confection making? How can AI help with productivity and keeping costs down? Once you start looking at this, whether it's my daughter in confection or the young man doing the cucumber business for his family, you begin to get a picture of what could be in the very near future. Right now in the world, there's 400 million small to medium enterprises. They have 95% of all working people work for these small enterprises. And as Andrew Ng said, the long tail of AI has not reached them yet. So we could be looking at a massive business of people doing prompts for small industries, medium-sized industries, etc., all over the world, and training and getting a cobot to perform the work, which would mean that the present cobot suppliers would be unable to service such a gigantic audience, a potential audience of 400 million small to medium enterprises. And what would probably happen in the future is those cobots would become commoditized. You could go to your Home Depot and buy one or rent one. They would become like fancy power tools, not like computers. And they probably should be sold like very exclusive power tools. A onesie-twosie sales kind of deal for millions of small to medium enterprises all over the world, using a robot and AI to help with their jobs. And we've already seen it manifest itself in the cucumber farm. So be on the lookout for cobots to finally be doing the job that they were intended to do. I remember talking to the inventors of the cobot, and their heart's desire was to create a tool that would democratize work for people. Cobots soon got up to be costing $25,000, and that's only like 25% of what it costs to install them. So they went way up in price. Small to medium enterprises don't go to trade shows. They don't look at robots. Only 3 out of 10 go to trade shows. So there's a huge need to get at these people. As of 2018, only 10% of the United States was automated. So AI in the hands of AI prompt engineers recommending cobots could become a gigantic business. And actually, the people who would really profit from it are the people who sell grippers. Right now, cobots do not sell a lot. Maybe 5 to 7% of all the robots sold in the world every year are cobots. And each year, the forecasters come out and say, oh, wow, next year they're going to do billions and billions of dollars worth of business, and they never do. And more than likely, it's they're selling to the wrong audience. They're selling to the automakers. And what a Stanford study said is five key states where 77% of all robots and cobots go, where the rest of the United States is left to drift. And the 2018 study that said only 10% of the United States was automated surely points up to the fact that there is a huge need for cobots. And now, with the advent of AI and AI prompt engineering, we may have a new flood of automation cascading across the United States in the hands of all these young expository writers who can really do great prompts. So for me, I am really positive. I'm looking forward to it all. And I think it's going to be a great job. Lots of people are now down in the dumps that the job is going to be taken. A door may have just opened very wide, because once you're selling a lot more cobots, once you're doing a lot of AI prompt engineering, you're creating sub-jobs for people to repair robots and cobots, for people to expand businesses and hire more people to help them with those businesses. So we may be looking upon a new gold rush in the country and in the world itself. It's been my distinct pleasure to research and develop this show and present it to you. And I want to thank you very much for your patience and interest.
That brings to a close today's edition of Radio News. As always, thank you for your interest and attention. Until our next report, please be sure to click on over to This Is Robotics, the online news column at Asian Robotics Review. Also, look for This Is Robotics Radio News at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Pandora. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, this is Radio News, signing off. Have a great day.